It has been estimated that every honeybee does $100 worth of work for farmers in pollinization alone. I'll return in a moment with the amazing facts about bee brains and the dilemma of evolution. Hello, this is Joe Cruz on the Amazing Facts broadcast, facts which affect you. Do you know how this world, the sun, moon, and the stars, and entire universe came into existence, friends? Astronomers tell us that there are 200 billion stars or suns in the galaxy, the Milky Way, and that there are 100 million other known galaxies. All right, answer my question then. How did all this come into existence? Now, don't tell me that all the billions of giant suns evolved out of nothing or out of stardust. If so, where did the stardust come from? I have a wristwatch on my wrist right now, and if I were to tell you that no one made that watch, but it just happened, you would laugh me to scorn. You know that somebody made it. It did not just happen. That's an utter impossibility. Then what about this complex universe of ours? Take some of the smaller things. Take the rose and the orchid. Who put them together with their beautiful colors and fragrance? Did they just happen? You know better than that. Even the humblest wildflower that grows in the woods bears evidence of the design of a master workman. No one would accept a modern collegiate dictionary as just an accident. Wouldn't you lift an eyebrow if you were informed that it's not the product of thousands of hours of patient research, but that it simply came about as a result of an explosion in a modern printing plant? You would laugh at such inanities as that. We know that a rocket had to have intelligent creation and that its course must have intelligent supervision. But I ask you, friends, are the speeding galaxies of the heavens and their precision pathways, are they out there in space only because of some celestial accident? Scientists don't seem to know exactly how our world originated. Possibly, they say, from some cosmic explosion of the restless gases of the distant past. That's the supposition. And then several million years ago, they say, life appeared in its simplest forms, followed by the slow magic of the ages, the wonders of accident and chance, the reign of tooth and claw, the survival of the fittest. And at last, life and civilization and culture as we know it today, the crowning miracle of unhurried evolution. But just how much are you willing to attribute to the unlikely magic of accident and chance, friends? If evolution happened, how did it happen? Would it be unreasonable to ask some specific questions? For example, how did tiny creatures of nature come by the fantastic design which enables them to miraculously survive extinction? Did you ever watch the fascinating activities of the common honeybee? Have you ever noticed that the bees are incredible architects? The hive is a masterpiece of engineering, with rows and rows of six-sided rooms with walls of wax. Now, this marble palace, we call it the comb, is built by young bees under 17 days old. Yet each little room is the same size, six-sided, with three pairs of walls facing each other. The walls of the rooms are only 2/1000ths of an inch thick, yet so strong that a pound of honey will support at least 25 pounds of honey. In other words, a pound of the comb will hold up 25 pounds of the honey. Now, you think of that for a moment. Only as thick as a hair of your head. Now, how did these young bees know that the hexagon has the smallest circumference, therefore requiring the smallest amount of building material? How do they know that hexagon cells are the best and most economical construction? Who told them that? Yet they do it all without blueprints or drawing boards or compasses, and every cell is perfect, just the size to fit a bee. How do they do it? Well, they hang themselves up like a festoon from the roof of the hive, or it may be in the hollow of a tree. One bee hooks onto the roof, and another bee hooks onto his dangling legs, and so forth, and these chains of bees grow longer and longer. And as they sway, they hook onto bees on the right and left until they form a living curtain. Now they hang up like this to produce wax. You see, there are four wax pockets on each side of the bee's abdomen. And after about 24 hours of hanging, wax begins to appear from these pockets. When a bee feels its wax is ready, it climbs up over the other bees, takes the wax out of its pockets, chews it, and puts it into the comb. At first, they just pile on wax. Then they form rough cups, climb into them, and push. And, of course, a lot of other bees are pushing at the same time. The result? The perfect shape and the incredibly thin walls. And that's the way the comb is built. Now, this beeswax is a remarkable substance in itself. It has the highest melting point of any known wax. This keeps it from melting in the 110-degree temperature of the summer heat. But, friends, the bees perform this work in perfect cooperation, as if their assignments were posted on a bulletin board. It must be a marvel of organization, you say. Yes, I agree. But who directs it? Who planted that incredible wisdom in the tiny brain of the bee? What engineer taught it how to construct a mathematically precise house which conforms to all the laws of science and nature? It almost seems that the bee has a computer brain which is programmed to building nothing less than perfect cells of wax. There may be 40 to 75,000 bees in a hive or more, all working in perfect harmony as a unit. But who is the leader? Certainly not the queen. The only time she exerts any leadership is when she's challenged by another queen and the bees follow her to a new hive. But otherwise, the queen bee is in reality nothing more than an egg-laying machine. In a single day, she can lay 2,000 eggs, but she does nothing else, and their weight alone would be 2 to 4 times more than the bee. Certainly, the drones are not the leaders. These male bees are completely indolent. They're waiting for just one thing, and that is to mate with the queen bee when she soars off on her courtship flight. Only 1 in 100 of the drones will ever make it. But what are the workers? They're the real marvels of the hive. Although they have no leader, each bee does just the right thing at the right time. Now, bees need two things, pollen and nectar. And both, of course, are found in flowers. And as they fly off to the fields of flowers, they go marvelously equipped. In the first place, a honeybee is a fantastically engineered flying machine. Man-made freight planes can carry a payload of about 25% of their weight. But a bee can carry almost 100% of its weight. The bee needs no propeller or jet. Its short, wide wings both lift and drive it. It can move straight up or down, or it can hover in midair. Its stubby wings fold in a split second when it dives into a flower. Or it can whirl its wings to cool the beehive. Now the bee has three places for storing cargo. One is a tank inside its body in which it stores nectar. Then on its hind legs, it has two storage baskets for carrying pollen. Now imagine a freight plane with its load dangling underneath. Are these pollen baskets something that evolved because of a need? Well, man first wrote about the bee in 3000 B.C. It had the pollen baskets then, and it hasn't changed since that time. A bee can suck up a load of nectar in a minute. It takes 3 minutes for it to build up 2 bulging loads of pollen in the baskets on its hind legs. How does it do it, friends? Well, the bee dives into a flower, its body picking up pollen by brushing past the pollen boxes. It splashes about in the flower, and the yellow powder clings to the hairs on its body. But now, it isn't so simple. How does it get the pollen into the baskets, and how does it keep the pollen from blowing away in flight? The load must be moistened, pressed together, tamped down, and evenly balanced on each leg. But believe it or not, the bee does it, and all the while hovering in midair or hanging by one claw. What kind of a brain does a little honeybee have? You haven't heard anything yet. Let me tell you about the waggle dance. You see, when the hive stirs in the morning, there may be 10,000 bees ready to go out and load up. But where would they go? They wait patiently while perhaps a dozen scouts go out to locate the day's plunder. When a scout bee finds treasure, it loads up and flies straight back to the hive. Here she goes through a peculiar performance. Dr. Harold Clark describes it. She gives samples of the nectar to the other bees and gets them all excited. Then, as they follow her around, she goes through a figure eight across the face of the comb. The angle at which she goes through the figure eight tells the others the direction of the field. But how far away is it? Bees are short-sighted, and they fly high. They must know just how far to go before coming down to earth. So with each movement through the figure eight, the scout executes a waggle dance by waggling her abdomen. The number of waggles in 15 seconds tells the distance to the field. But the problem is not so simple as it seems, friends. A field twice as far away will not be indicated by twice as many waggles, for the number executed is in reverse ratio to the distance. That is, the farther away the field, the fewer waggles. For example, if it makes 10 circles in 15 seconds, the field of flowers is 300 feet away. But if the scout moves in slow motion, say 2 circles in 15 seconds, the flowers are almost 4 miles away. Still more marvelous is the fact that the ratio will not be one of simple arithmetic, but a number indicated by a logarithmic figure. So the honeybee uses higher mathematics in directing the workers to the field of flowers. I say again, what kind of a brain does she have? Is this just an accident? I wonder if you realize just how necessary the honeybee is, not only to our economy, but even to life itself. Bees, you see, handle up to 80% of all the pollinating that's done by insects. To show just how important bees are in pollinization, listen to this. As an experiment, one branch of a pear tree was tied with gauze so that bees could not get to it. The branch did not yield a single pear. Another branch, with no more blossoms than the other, but exposed to bees, produced 33 pears. Now, of course, without plants and flowers, bees could not exist. So it works both ways. Without bees, plant and flowers could not exist. Without the plant kingdom, there'd be no oxygen, and the earth could not be inhabited. You and I could not even exist without the honeybee. Now, did the honeybee, with all its fantastic equipment for its job, just happen, friends? Through long ages? A little bit at a time? Well, think it through. Suppose a bee started out with wings that wouldn't fold up to enable it to dive into a flower. How would it survive until it developed that kind of wings? What if it had no pollen baskets on its hind legs? What if it had the pollen baskets but not the knee joints to press the pollen into the baskets, or the sense to know how to do it? What if it had no hairs on its body to collect the pollen, or the hairs but no way to comb off the pollen? What if it hadn't developed a nectar tank yet? What if it had no wax-making equipment, or didn't know that it was supposed to hang up in a festoon for 24 hours to make the wax come out? What if the wax would not withstand the high temperatures of the hive, as few waxes would? And what if the bees didn't know how to make royal jelly to feed the queen, and the queen died? What if a bee couldn't find its way back to the hive or back to its field of flowers? Well, the questions fairly tumble out, friends. They're endless. And I think you can see that any one piece of the bee's physical equipment would be completely useless without all the others. To be of any use whatsoever, every bit of the bee's equipment and know-how would have to be developed simultaneously, all at once and instantly. Or if evolution happened, consider this. The very first bee, way back there sitting on a limb of a tree, what kind of bee was it? Was it a queen? But a queen couldn't survive without a whole colony to feed her. And a drone couldn't without a mate, and the drones would have no other reason to exist except to mate with a queen. So you see, friends, we run into all kinds of impossible problems if we don't believe in a divine designer and creator.
You've been listening to a Joe Cruz classic produced by Amazing Facts Ministries. Please call us today for a free and surprisingly encouraging booklet called How Evolution Flunked the Science Test. You'll be amazed at how easy it is to have faith in our Creator despite what some scientists might ask you to believe. Ask for How Evolution Flunked the Science Test when you call us toll-free at 877-JOE-CRUZ. That's 877-JOE-CRUZ. The booklet is free and so is the phone call, so call right now. 877-JOE-CRUZ. And for more free Bible study resources from Amazing Facts, visit the website at amazingfacts.org. Until next time, remember this amazing fact: Jesus loves you.